All right, Coach, you know, we give Ira a lot of crap here on the podcast. He says he knows you, he's your buddy, he loves you. You know, what can you say about Ira that you spent years around him as a journalist, as a guy?
Well, let me tell you this. He's got the greatest voice I ever heard. I can't imitate him well, but he's a friend of mine, and he's a guy I consider great at what he does because he does the work, and he watches practice. He takes pride in you know, getting the story correct, and he's just been loyal. I've always considered him a friend, and I consider him an expert when it comes to pro football.
I'm the demographic for X-Lax.
Happy Thanksgiving on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. The Sage of Tampa Bay Sports is working on the holiday. How about that, Ira?
Happy holidays to all our listeners from Tel Aviv to Buenos Aires and all points in between. And a special shout-out for Javier in Panama. Why not?
There was a gentleman, and I forget his handle, I apologize, but there was a gentleman listened to your last podcast, and he said he will be visiting the Vatican in the spring.
Nice.
And he will listen to your podcast at the Vatican. And I asked him if he would tip off the pontiff for you.
I hope he doesn't immediately go to the Wailing Wall after listening to one of my podcasts. But, Steve, happy holidays to this growing Joe Bucks fan family.
And, of course, Ira, your podcast is presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Holiday time is zero downtime at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa. General Manager Brian Danahy has the season's best savings. Lease a 2018 CTS for just $399 a month with zero down. Yes, a CTS, $399, zero down. Now's your last chance to get these clearance prices, Ira. Last chance, rush to Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. Or first visit EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com. Dealer has all the details. And over at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, now you can save on a luxurious Cadillac and get more peace of mind at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon with their like-new certified pre-owned Cadillacs. All, Ira, all of their certified pre-owned Cadillacs are inspected, reconditioned, and warrantied. Right now, get special financing and pay thousands less than new car prices. Visit EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. That's EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon is also right there for you on Causeway Boulevard. See the dealer for all the details. How about those offers, Ira? Black Friday. The dealership's closed today, but they fire up again tomorrow morning. That's going to be the place to be, and I know you will be picking up little Dante coming back from the animal shelter. You might want to cruise over there and see if he enjoys life in the back of an ATS.
And he gets a bath before he goes home, too. Steve, how do you like that? I wish I would stay at a place that gives me a bath before I go home, but no such luck.
I'd settle for you for taking a bath every day, Ira.
As far as Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, the deals keep on coming, Steve. We're approaching the end of the year, but it's not the end of the deals. I know they've had a good year, both dealerships, Steve, and I urge all our listeners and readers to go check them out. I think you're going to be very pleased with customer service, the best values in town, and a great ride.
Thanksgiving Day, I know you go to your brother-in-law's house.
I do, my brother.
That's an annual ritual for you.
It is.
And he's a chef.
This guy knows what he's doing in that kitchen.
What are some of the goods he serves for you?
Well, besides the main event, you know, the grand turkey, mm-hmm. You know, you've got the creamed onions, you've got the spinach, the green beans, perhaps a little rutabaga for you people that know what rutabaga is. I think it's a yellow turnip.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is.
I was going to say squash.
Yeah, squash. You know, all the trimmings, a couple of pies mm-hmm. afterwards, whipped cream. My son's going to be there, so it's going to be a good time. And it's a three-and-a-half-hour drive, so I'm a little worried about traffic.
Does he fry the chicken, or is it baked like standard?
Turkey.
Or, I'm sorry, turkey, yes.
In the oven, okay. Right in the oven, with all the stuffing and everything. It's soup to nuts. I mean, there's 28 different dishes out there, and believe me, Isbits, I try every one of them.
All right, Ira, as a gift for your family.
Like Baskin Robbins.
Look at this, a gift.
As a gift for your family, you can tell them all to subscribe absolutely free to your podcast on Podbean, Google Play, iTunes. Listen to it on JoeBucksFan.com. We appreciate all the people leaving comments. A lot of comments came through the last couple of days. That's always interesting.
I think we've been on a little roll with this podcast. Now, there's been some news. We're showing some fresh and fair perspective about it.
Real quick, Ira, 1930s, Brooklyn, what's Thanksgiving look like?
1930s.
He's got me in the 30s. Now, look, I was a little toddler when the Giants and the Dodgers left Brooklyn. I was a toddler.
Okay.
No, I never went to Ebbets Field. And I never went to the Polo Grounds.
Not even for the Giants games?
Let's get that out there.
Not even. I'm not San Francisco. I'm talking about the New York football Giants.
I was
Giants.
A toddler. Oh, New York football Giants? Nah. I was a Chiefs fan in the 60s. I don't know anything about
you didn't go
Giants.
Watch the Chiefs play the
Absolutely
Jets there?
Absolutely not. So what was it like back then? Well, my brother and I would celebrate Thanksgiving in style. We go down to the corner Vito's Pizza Parlor and we get a couple of nice pies. And back then, the pie was $1, Isbits. $1.
So Vito's was open on Thanksgiving?
Oh, of course. They did a booming business.
Did they? Well,
yeah, everybody in Brooklyn, all the Italians, the Jews, we all got together over a pie. And maybe a little Zeppoli, if you guys know what a Zeppoli
sure,
is.
Heard of it. I've heard of it.
You know, it's got a lot of sugar on the top of it. And if you wear nice clothes, you better not eat a Zeppoli. Because
a lot of powdered sugar.
If the oil doesn't get you, the powdered sugar will.
Oh, it's a pastry.
Yeah, it's a pastry.
Okay.
It's fried bread with sugar on it.
That's exactly what it is. And it's Café Du Monde is famous for that. They call them beignets. Very similar.
It's similar to a beignet, huh?
Similar to a beignet.
Those are good stuff.
But in Brooklyn, you don't call anything a beignet. You get found in an alley or something. Proceed, Stephen.
Interesting. Very interesting. And you know, of course, back then, they didn't really have turkeys in the city, you know?
Well, a couple of people down the block, call them that. But
Not Muriel.
Pizza ruled in my neighborhood. Pizza was king.
All right. Look, we're at One Buck Palace in our windowless room here today. We've been sequestered. And it's Wednesday, so it's not Thanksgiving, but we're in the Thanksgiving spirit. Ira, you've been here today. You talked to Mike Smith. You mingled around the locker room.
I did.
This team's on a two-game winning streak. Does it feel like it? What are you feeling?
Lee, you tell me. I know you were in there with me. Isbits conspicuously absent. I saw more juice. And I don't mean just at the ping pong table and the basketball net. A little more bounce in the step. The music was lively.
Oh, boy. Donovan Smith, huh?
I'm starting to think that this team believes that they can do some damage. Now, whether they can or not, I went up to several players, and I know they've been talking about this. And I just, you know, I said to Ali Marpet and a couple other guys, Adam Humphries, you go up to Atlanta and you win this game, and that's a big if.
Sure.
Just ask the Vegas odds makers. It's a big if. If it happens, and I think they've won two straight in Atlanta.
They have.
Not too bad. Things could get interesting because Green Bay without Aaron Rodgers is not nearly as formidable.
Mm-hmm.
And the Packers are in a tailspin. So we'll see. First things first. You got to go to up Atlanta and win this game. If you don't, you know, I think you're done pretty much now.
Yeah.
But you're certainly done if you lose in Atlanta. I saw a little more enthusiasm, Steve. That's what two wins will do for you. Defense feeling good about itself in general. My first question to Mike Smith, Lee, you were there. You want to talk about the great job you guys did on first and second down to get get the third and eight and third and ten? Or you want to talk about what you did on third and eight and third and ten? And, you know, Mike Smith's very honest. You know, if he could go either way with that question, he chose to talk about their problems. You know, and he said it was atrocious, basically.
You're supposed to win
85 or 90%. Of those challenges on third and 10. And they did, especially, you know, second half was bad.
No, you're up on this. I'm not. I should have looked it up. Things are getting weird for me at my place last night or two. But at any rate, Raiders fired their defensive coordinator,
yes.
Ken Norton.
Yes.
I did not know this. They have not had an interception yet this year.
That is outrageous.
For 10 games? I've never heard of that before.
A team with Khalil Mack putting pressure
yes.
on a quarterback?
Yes. But in addition to that, I could have swore I heard, you know, I had NFL Network in the background, I heard that they were giving up 72% pass completion.
I think that's
Is that
right.
accurate?
And this is a franchise, guys. Remember, with the great Willie Brown, Lester Hayes.
Old man Willie.
Mike Haynes.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, they've had some great defensive backs.
No kidding. Well, the reason why I bring that up is, you know, as horrendous as the Bucs' third down conversion is against the defense, they're not giving up 72% pass completion.
No, no.
It's not that bad.
But they're probably still last in the league in third down defense. I'm sure they are.
I looked at that today. Atlanta's actually middle of the pack. Bucs are about 50%. Atlanta's about third. It was like 39.8, which is right in the middle of the league.
The thing that jumps out at me at Atlanta, the rise of Adrian Claiborne. Now, I was going to say the resurgence. You can't have a resurgence if you were never there.
He was never there. Mm-hmm.
Steve, his Buck career was marked by injury and general ineffectiveness. You know, he'd get his 4 or 5 sacks. That's not a first-round pick, Lee.
No.
The guy was never healthy. Maybe this is a result of being healthy or whatever, but he looks very animated. He looks fast, and he looks angry. And Ryan Fitzpatrick better watch his step against this guy.
Well, I'll tell you what. up until 2 weeks ago against Dallas. You can sum up his Atlanta career in one word. Loaf. The famous Jameis Winston, and by the way, this is a part of Jameis Winston's game which we haven't seen this year, and we don't know if he'll return or not. That infamous 19-yard run he had for a first down to beat Atlanta at home, Adrian Claiborne loafed, gave up twice on him. I mean, just stopped. Just stopped on that play. If he would have piled on, Winston would have been tackled twice.
Well, I don't see loafed. Him. I don't see him loafing in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, like, I wonder why I flipped the switch. But,
and,
you know,
of course, Vic Beasley, Steve, he's getting healthy, and he proved last year he's a stud. A little bit disappointing early in his career. Took him a while to get it. But last year he was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might have led the league in sacks last year, Vic Beasley.
He may have.
14 or 15. And he's coming back from an injury. He's, mm-hmm. he's been back a couple of weeks. So if Claiborne keeps playing like that, they got Grady Jarrett up there. This is going to be a problem for the Buck offensive line, which has held up pretty well in pass protection.
Yeah, pass blocking's been excellent, really.
Second half, I didn't like it last week against Miami. I didn't like the pass.
Well, they were blitzing a lot more.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you can't.
Well, pick up the blitz, Steven. Pick it up.
I understand that, but they were sending extra numbers.
Yeah, and, they sent seven guys.
Bucks didn't adjust very well. But overall, it's been certainly the last thing you'd have to worry about on this team is pass protection.
We asked Sweezy today about run blocking, Steve. Your favorite topic.
Oh, well, let's get to that. You know, Claiborne. It'll be a little fair to Claiborne. When he got to Atlanta, they had him playing defensive tackle. So, and he had beefed up. You know, they paid him a lot of money, and then they re-upped him. He's played pretty well. He's just never turned into that first-round pick, the guy who walked in on the Bucks and had 7 or 7.5 sacks his first year, and everybody was excited. Hey, this guy is,
He was known for hustle, the motor.
Yeah.
When every draft season I hear someone say, well, this guy's got motor. I said, yeah, so does Adrian Claiborne.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, he was playing part-time, a couple of sacks.
He
gets 6 against the Cowboys.
And playing part-time.
So, hey, that should re-energize anybody.
The dreadlocks make him look quicker.
The interesting thing I read was Claiborne had a massive incentive in his contract for sacks.
Oh.
So literally, from what I read...
Yeah, like $100,000 a sack?
Literally, now that it was tiered or something, but that 6 sacks night pushed him into a $750,000 bonus.
Yeah.
That's good motivation.
That's a good night's work right there. I was just taking a peek. Bucks are allowing 66.7% completion rate against them.
Not good.
That's fifth worst in the league, second worst in the NFC. If we want to look for a future happy point, the Packers are the worst in the NFC, so they're giving it up. And yeah, Lee's right.
And they're right on the horizon.
Raiders over 72%, which is
brutal.
Gosh. And no interceptions. And they only have 14 sacks. Which is one worse than the Bucks, believe it or not. So
you would think during the modern era of pro football, no team's ever finished a season without an interception. You would think.
That's hard to do.
That's hard to do.
Even by accident. You know, just one bad pass.
Yeah, you're going to luck into one or something.
Speaking of interceptions, Ira, did you see that the Bucks are now tied for third most takeaways in the league thanks to that 5-turnover game last week at Miami?
You know, like Mike Smith said, Steve, in his news conference, if the Buck defense can hang its hat under Mike Smith a year and a half in, they are good at takeaways. They are good at it, and they come in a hurry. Second half last year was very, very strong on the takeaways. That's why they won that game Sunday. They certainly didn't beat up the Dolphins in the trenches or handle Matt Moore well. They took advantage of those early turnovers and built the lead and held on for dear life.
I want your thoughts on this, Ira. 2 points, and they're both related to takeaways. This defense is starting to turn into Lovie Smith's defense. What I mean by that is Lovie was always worried about takeaways. He wasn't worried about punts. The results spoke for themselves. Tell me if I'm wrong. At least on the road, that looks like Lovie Smith's defense. They give up third down passes like crazy, but they'll get takeaways.
The problem with that, guys, is from year to year, it's hard to rely on takeaways. It's almost like you're camouflaging weaknesses, giving up gobs of yards. And you can't count on it every year that you're going to get, 26 takeaways or whatever it is. The old days, not only did the Buck great defense have takeaways, they didn't give up a lot of points or a lot of yards. They shut you down. This defense doesn't shut you down for the most part.
Now, every coach, they're firm believers in takeaways equals wins. And, if you want to argue that most games in the NFL
are
one-score games, okay, I'll buy that to a degree. But you know what? If the Bucs continue this season the way they are, a lot of takeaways, a lot of losses, that'll be the second time in five seasons, the Bucs will have finished third in the NFL in takeaways, yet have a losing record.
That's disturbing.
Shiano, the same way. He was Bucks were third in the NFL with 31 takeaways in 2013. Yet, what, they have four wins? They stunk. Force a punt once in a while, please.
Yeah, I think Ira goes to, and this was a broader point that our friend the commish, Justin Pulaski, on his...
We're quoting the commish?
Well, no, I'm not quoting the commish. I'm sharing that it was something that he brought up as well that I agreed with, something I had wanted to talk about too on Bucks Uncensored, part of the great JoeBucksFan.com podcast family. This goes to the Bucks not having an identity. What is this team? You know, we don't know. They don't run, but they move the ball. They're all over the place on offense. They can't throw deep. They can't run, but they won some games. They
weak
don't,
pass rush.
We don't. Yeah. You know, the quarterback's a mystery every week. No pass rush, but they got a million takeaways. And you don't know. And they played so differently at home than on the road. It's just a team that we don't really know.
I think that's a fair
where
point.
We're going.
Lee, it's a fair point. They're not physical. You know, they don't beat you up. Even if you're a losing team, you could have a reputation as being physical. I remember some of the Bears teams that weren't very good.
Took the words out of my mouth.
But you were having a long day at the office when you played the Bears.
They had losing records. You got beat up when you played
you
them.
Got
That's
beat
exactly
up.
Right. You're a good point.
And
great point.
And this is not that type of team. Mm-hmm.
Well, I got news for everybody, and I love Justin. I haven't heard his Wednesday podcast. Heard Justin's Monday podcast. He was on fire, man. I loved it. It was great. What is their identity? I'm going to go Bill Parcells. Your identity is you're 4-6. That's your identity.
I understand.
The season ended today, and we were looking back on this season 3 years from now, and somebody said, hey, what was this 2017 team like? We don't know.
Oh, I know. One word. Jeff Cameron and I, Scuttlebucks, underperforming.
I think that would be it. It would be disappointing or underachieving, underperforming.
Because you look on paper, all the talent they have, and they have a losing record.
You know what happens a lot of times, Steve? Now, look. The Bucks could finish 8-8, 9-7, or they could finish 6-10. And if they do finish 6-10, you know what a lot of people are going to say? This is classic revisionism, Lee, and I disregard it. They weren't that talented to begin with.
No one said that before the season.
No, and I'm going to reject that, Steve. I think they have enough talent, and that's why they're underachieving.
Well,
you don't look at this 53-man roster and say, they don't have any horses. It's a 4-12 team.
Well, I think I have to disagree with you a little
of
bit.
Of course.
Well, look.
Of course.
We can say that they had plenty of talent, and we all agreed that they had enough talent to be a winning team, and maybe Lee and I never said they were a playoff team, but, hey, they should be competitive again for that, you know, going into the final weeks for sure. Ryan Fitzpatrick has made two starts. Your starting quarterback's been hurt. Those are the teams that usually go 7-9, 8-8. So if they do go 7-9 with this bunch, and let's say Fitzpatrick ends up making five starts or something, and Jameis makes two or three down the stretch, in the second half of the season, that's a great finish.
Let me take care of this, DeKemper, before you weigh in, because he needs to be taken care of. Steve, I have a low bar for you, Isbits. It's a low bar. But I'm not going to let you get away with this, Isbits. This is also going to be classic revisionism should they go 6-10. People are going to say it's all about Winston's shoulder. May I remind you, gentlemen, the Bucks weren't very good before Winston's right shoulder made contact with the turf in Arizona. They weren't very good. They were getting blown out in that game, which was going to leave them at 2-3.
Minnesota.
And I also want to remind you that he played extremely well in Buffalo. Couldn't play much better.
He had
and
the
they
win.
Lost.
Yeah.
And
he
they
gave
lost.
Them the win.
So take that, Isbits, low bar, and you managed to go below it.
Yeah, like I say, they've won two games since Jameis went out.
And that's another point.
If you're going to play fantasy football here and you're going to draft players that were available in the Bucks, of course, who wouldn't draft DeSean Jackson, Mike Evans, Jameis, Brate, GMC, Levante. I mean, come on.
Quan Alexander.
Quan, yeah, of course. Brent Grimes. I mean, there's all kinds of players on this.
By the way, let's do a little shout-out for...
Hey, look, all right, I'm not just going to go away.
Otherwise, you're going
to
get dropped
to shout-out land. What I'm saying is, if the Bucks close out these last six games, which are all against good football teams...
Except Green Bay.
Except Green Bay, but Green Bay still has a ton of talent. If they finish out 3-3 and go 7-9 and Jameis doesn't step on the field the rest of the season, I'm sorry, that's not a colossal failure when Ryan Fitzpatrick has played more than half the season. I'm sorry, it's not.
Go try telling that to Buck fans who expected 10 wins and a playoff run and didn't get it.
Now, what do you say to the Buck fans? There's a growing swell a growing swell that if Fitzpatrick beats the Falcons, that, you know what, Jameis isn't your quarterback.
I'm not going to go there, guys. I mean, you know.
And I'm not saying I agree with that.
I like to look forward, and Ryan Patrick's not going to be here in a year or two. This franchise, you know, has to look forward, and I'm not giving up on Jameis Winston. There might be some, you know, major Winston skeptics out there that are listening to this podcast, Lee. I think some of these people have lost their minds, say that Winston doesn't have the talent to be be a top-level NFL quarterback. He can't throw a long ball. Guys, if Jameis Winston can't throw a long ball, why was he the first pick in the draft? Why was he the first pick in the draft?
He threw
right
a long
there,
ball.
Right there, it disqualifies you. He can't be the first overall pick if you can't throw a long ball.
I've said this many times. He had no problem throwing a long ball at Florida State. I witnessed some of those games with my own eyes. His first collegiate game up at Pittsburgh. I've told the story before. I just happened to be at Pittsburgh at the same time. And a buddy of mine, and I said, hey, man, Florida State's playing Pitt. Let's go see this game. And he almost threw a perfect game. He was throwing bombs, threw bombs against Boston College. I could go on.
What I think Fitzpatrick's early success and give Fitzpatrick his due. He's played pretty well, you know, and give Jason Light a bone.
He's navigated the storm.
He picked up Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
And, you know, it's turned out to be a decent move.
Not that it was a first pick or a first choice. But
Steve, you know what it's done? There's no rush to put Winston back on the field. There's no rush.
Nor should there
be. You put him back when he's...
How do you know there's no rush?
There's no rush.
You don't think they're sitting up there in the offices here saying, damn, I hope he's healthy tomorrow. I hope he's healthy tomorrow and we can get him back. Sure, there's a rush. Well, there's jobs on the line.
Fitzpatrick's 2-0. No, nobody's saying the sky's falling with Ryan Fitzpatrick right now. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but now we're going to play.
If they keep winning, especially beating a good team in Atlanta, and Fitzpatrick's under center, I don't think there's any rush to get Winston back until he's completely healthy. That's all I'm saying.
Ira, we're playing all hypothetical games here, which the listeners know that we're speculating what this could be. But I just believe that, look, this organization, if Jameis Winston is here and on the roster and he's healthy, they're dying to get him back on the field. Which is they should be, because he's the number one overall pick, and he is the future of the franchise as long as he's still here. Now, I cut you off before. You wanted to give a shout-out to somebody or something, and you wanted to talk about J.R. Sweezy.
Contest handler?
You had a Sweezy thing.
Well, just a quick shout-out to Gerald McCoy. I think we mentioned it the other day, but he played a whale of a game.
Oh, very good.
Played a whale of a game and got poked in the eye. Guys, the week before against the Jets, Lee, didn't you say that after the game the guy could barely stand up? He could barely walk. He was very sore.
Yeah, he was sore.
So, you know, props to McCoy. And I asked Mike Smith about it. He said, boy, they changed their whole blocking pattern in the second half. They said, we better take care of 93. They put extra resources. He was unblockable one-on-one.
And Sunday. Someone didn't adjust, which is pretty obvious.
I understand. But he was basically unblockable.
Well, that wasn't a shot at McCoy.
I know.
Yeah, looking at the film in that game, it's almost fun if you really go back and look at it. You watch the Dolphins struggle in some triple teams against McCoy. Yeah. They're struggling to block him, which is just kind of fun. It's almost like an old comedy routine.
As far as the Sweezy, I think our comrade, Mr. Cummings, asked Mr. Sweezy about, hey, the pass blocking's been pretty good overall. Run blocking, not so much. What's going on the run blocking side? We've asked every member of this organization about this. We've asked Cutter about it every week, Munkin, and we get all kinds of answers. Well, Sweezy towed the company line. What did he say? It's a five-man unit, and if one out of the five doesn't get doesn't do the job, the whole thing breaks down. And it's not always the same guy. I mean, we've heard that. So my answer is, can't you get five guys to work together?
Well, I'll throw this out there. I looked this up. Doug Martin is averaging less than 50 yards a game. Now, come on.
Now, you saw my stat on the Twitter. It got a lot of reactions, Steve. I went over the last 2 years to give him a sizable number of carries. I believe it was 256. That's a full year's workload for a top back, you know. That's not named Ezekiel Elliott.
I'm going to be a little crude here, okay?
You're not going to be crude. I'm going to finish my statement.
It's this podcast.
Lee, yes. Over the last 2 years, 256 carries. 120-yard run, one.
Whoa.
And I think it probably was 22 yards. It was not 40.
29, yeah.
Yeah. And a 3.0 average. You can't average 3.0 with a lot of carries. That's a problem.
Good research.
And, you know, some Buck fans are saying it ain't Martin's fault. It's the line. Some are saying it's the line. Doug's running hard. My answer to them was Martin's running hard and going nowhere.
Yeah. Road to nowhere.
All right, what do you want to say, Isbits?
Well, maybe in this politically correct climate we live in, I shouldn't go that as crude as I was going to go.
But go there anyway.
I think maybe I'll skip it. No, look.
Now, look, you're the guy that said they shouldn't they should have got rid of Doug Martin. And
well, they should have, of course.
So, is he earning his, $7 million?
So you got every reason
but
to crow right
if
now.
It's not, there's no crow. There's no crow. This is miserable, Ira. And forget about that. Once he's here, he's here. He's on the team. That's fine.
Right.
Give another guy a shot. Another guy could do just as badly, and there's no benefit here to, you know, Cutter believes Martin's better than his other running backs. Okay, well, doesn't look like a very good decision, Dirk. And you know what? If Martin doesn't have a team next year, it's going to look like a terrible decision. And there's plenty of guys who are on the Bucs in the Cutter regime. Pick a coach in their regime where he's our guy, he's our guy, he's our guy. Poof, he's out of football next year. So, you know,
and Lee, you talk about motivation from Martin's standpoint. He's got to be extremely motivated when he came back, number one, to prove himself to his teammates, and number two, he's playing for next year's contract, perhaps with another team. He's very highly motivated, and he's gone nowhere.
I don't think you can even gauge somebody's motivation, Ira. You could also say, the guy's made tens of millions of dollars. He's got 1,100 carries on his legs. He's 29. He knows he's got little demand. Next year, he's probably going to play for $1 million if he wants to somewhere. Maybe he wants out. I mean, you could play that side, too.
Would he want out of an organization that gave him a chance where some organizations would not have?
No, out of football.
Out of football.
Out of football.
I think he likes it here. But a lot of people would like it if they didn't have to produce and they got paid $7
million. Sweezy. Anthony Beck, this is by the time this podcast pops, it's something that will be on JoeBucksFan.com. But
Beck knows this team pretty well.
Well, very interesting point. You know, Beck, look, he's paid by the organization for radio network, stuff on the website. He doesn't go all out negative, but he's not all out cheerleader, you know, and sometimes you can catch him in a more real moment. And he was on the radio today and he said, Sweezy looks like a guy who did not regain his flexibility after surgery. That, you know, doesn't mean the power's not there. Doesn't mean he's not healthy.
Maybe the bend,
but it looks like he lost some bend and all the power in the world isn't going to help you if you're missing an inch and a half or 2 inches of bend. That's all the leverage, and he's not the same guy. So Anthony Becht, who obviously, you know, was run blocking for a dozen years in the NFL, is saying he's seeing a guy in Sweezy who doesn't have the leverage, doesn't have the physical ability to bend and block in the running game.
That's
and he's
problem,
getting blown
Steve.
Up. That's a problem.
That's a problem.
Okay, and we know that the regime here swore that he's healthy, he's ready to go, and maybe he is healthy and ready to go, but he doesn't have what he had before.
And Lee, his presence in 2017 was a prime motivating factor in moving Marpet from right guard to center.
Very much so.
So, there's ramifications to this whole Sweezy
thing. So that's something to watch going forward. Now, Becht allowed the fact that, hey, you know what, Sweezy having a full off season after a healthy season, he could probably get back into a more flexibility routine.
Perhaps.
More of a flexibility routine in the offseason and gain some of that back physically. But that's not a good sound from a guy on your Buccaneers radio network who played the game in the trenches and knows it.
Beck's not going out of his way to be a negative.
No, at all.
No, he was just answering a question honestly. He wasn't ripping the guy. But he also said that a lot of times with offensive lines, which is also a little troubling, he said with offensive linemen, 10 games into the season, you kind of are who you are. You're not necessarily going to resurrect yourself with all your bumps and bruises and your aches and pains and become a different line late in the season. Then it happens, but unless you have a lot of young players, which the Bucs don't have on their line, you know, it's not like a pile of rookies out there. It's interesting. We'll see if they can revive a little bit. I think on the flip side, McCoy is going to have a tougher time. This Atlanta offensive line is not what they've faced the last couple of weeks.
Well, Alex Mack's outstanding, one of the best centers in football. You know, Lee, one more thing on the run blocking. You know, I don't think we can talk too much about this. It's got to be driving Cutter crazy. The offensive coordinator, the play caller, just week after week, ineffective. 60 yards, 50 yards, you know, 68 yards. Lee, I'm using 100-yard mark as a yardstick, and that's not a very high yardstick. 100 yards as a team.
As a team, okay.
They've played 10
that's
games.
Not, yeah, you're right. That's not
Lee,
huge.
They played 10 games this year, and they've reached it twice. They happen to be 2-0 in those games.
Interesting.
2 out of 10, Lee. Unacceptable.
That's not good.
Unacceptable. And I don't think you can say Cutter has abandoned the run. I don't think he's guilty.
The other way
of that.
Around.
Yeah, some fans are going crazy. What, you know, why are you running so
yeah,
much?
Yeah, why beat your head up against the wall?
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to be a hypocrite because, you know, if he's only running 11 times, I'm all over Cutter for abandoning the run. I'm not going to jump on him for running 24 times. My problem is, along Steve's lines, why is Martin getting 19 of those carries?
Well, that and it almost sounds like Cutter's taking advice from Mark Dominic. Mark Dominic was on NFL radio recently, and a Bucs caller called in. I haven't documented this yet on JoeBucsFan.com, but probably over the holiday weekend I will. And this guy, you know, a frustrated fan, was first he complimented Mark on all he did for the Bucs, and then he's like, well, what's wrong with this run game? And Dominic basically said, you keep feeding people the ball till it works. I don't know if that's smart or not.
I got a little, Steve, just to
flash back to Dominic, look, in 2009, their whole plan was, okay, let's get a three-headed monster at running back, Ernest Graham, Derek Ward, we're going to sign him, we got Cadillac, and we're going to pound the rock 30-something times a game because we have no receivers and no quarterback, and we don't know when we want to put in the rookie. And they stuck with that, and they believed in that, and it didn't do much for them. But
Every time I think of Derek Ward, I think a photo's on Twitter of him in a hot tub.
Yeah.
He was always in a hot tub.
Yeah. Is that right?
He always loved the pool party. Yeah, he always had a pool party.
You
remember, Lee used to post his picture with Khloe Kardashian all the time.
And, oh, yeah. That's right, in the pool.
Steve, I got a little juice out of the locker room. I got a little juice story.
Well, good. We're 33 minutes in. Where's the juice?
Went up to Brent Grimes as he was shooting hoops and doing it quite well, I might add.
I've heard he's a good basketball player.
And I also saw him on a ping pong table. He's outstanding. Mm-hmm. The guy's a phenomenal athlete.
He just is.
Anyway.
Wait a minute.
Ping pong. I understand.
Ping pong in the locker room and basketball on a 6-foot, well, 7-foot basket?
Apparently the guy's a very good basketball player. Isbitz.
He is. All right.
You want to play him one-on-one?
Well,
I'll back Grimes. How do you like that, Isbitz?
On a 6-foot basket, I'll play Grimes.
There you go. Anyway, I went up to him. And, of course, I got the Hall of Fame fresh on my mind, which we haven't talked about.
Let's get to that, Ira.
All right, but here's the
Then I'll have a Grimes story real quick.
Yeah, here's the Grimes story. I went up to him and I said, hey, Brent, was Ronnie Barber a guy that you followed, you know, closely when you were in college and stuff like that, a mentor? And heck of a player, Grimes said, you know, loved the way he played the game, tremendous in that scheme. And I said, yeah, and he turned in the biggest play in franchise history. Did you happen to see that game? He goes, oh, yeah. I was an Eagles fan, my whole family, and we were all hacked off at Rondé for bringing that back to the house. So the man was an Eagles fan, Grimes, and he wasn't happy that Rondé turned in a play that might help him one day get into Canton. You know, it's not the only reason Rondé should be in Canton, but it's a nice little cherry on top of the cake.
There you go.
But I said, yeah, and they shut down the Vet, and Grimes looked at me, he goes, what an awful place the Vet was. I guess he went there as a fan, maybe.
I got two Grimes stories real quick. First one, Bucks fans will be interested in. Apparently, Miko put this on Twitter. Gil Arcia, our friend Gil Arcia, retweeted this. That apparently, and I hope I have my timeline right, because I haven't looked it up. I forgot all about this till you brought up Brent Grimes. That when he first left Atlanta, the Bucks reached out to him, and there was interest, which Dominic claimed there never was. There was interest, this per Miko, but Dominic wouldn't cut the right check.
This is before he went to Miami?
I thought he went straight from Atlanta to Miami.
Okay.
He did go from Atlanta to Miami, but when he left Atlanta, he was coming off an Achilles tear.
Yes, I remember. And Dominic said that's why he stayed away from him.
Okay.
Yeah, Miko claims that Bucks made an offer, but it wasn't what's the word I'm looking for?
It wasn't satisfactory.
Yeah, it was not satisfactory.
I didn't see the tweet. I didn't know they made an offer. But it's interesting if she said offer.
Yeah, that's what she said.
That's neat.
And here's another Grimes story. This maybe people want, and I like, what the heck. But it shows the life of Miko and Brent. They did an Instagram video last night. Why are you doing Instagram videos? You're about ready to go to bed. I don't know, but what the hell. And
this sounds intriguing over here at the Kemper.
And all of a sudden, Brent climbs out of bed, jumps on the floor. And she's like, what are you doing, boy? And he does like about 12 quick push-ups. And she goes, get back in bed.
That's the same routine I do. Same routine.
He jumps back in bed. Jumps back in bed after he does about 12 push-ups.
So mine's grabbing 12 cupcakes.
Okay. And her subtitle on the Instagram video was, it's Falcons Week.
Oh,
So he's so intense that he gets out of bed to do push-ups.
I thought this was going to be a juicy story over here, and then taking us into the bedroom over there.
I was going to say that.
I know we got push-ups.
That's what I was going to say. That's Ira's routine. He gets down. He does 10.
Give me 10. Yeah.
Takes off his smoking jacket.
Steve, can we talk for a moment? About the announcement on Tuesday.
Your impressions, Ira. Then we have 27 instead of 25.
That's right.
Because there was a couple of the final slot was tied for votes. So we have a rare 27 finalists, and of course the three Bucks got in there. Simeon Ronde and John Lynch. What do you think?
Well, Lee, let's start with Simeon. Respect finally for 97. He's on the radar. You got to get on that radar, and let's not forget that. Lynch's first year of eligibility, which was 08, he made this list of semifinalists, this stage. He did not make the finalist list.
No, just to be clear, it's one step to get in the room.
I said 08, and then he had to wait 5 years, so 2013.
But just to be clear, not just Lynch, but in general, the rule, semifinalists right now, correct?
Yes.
If they make the next step, then they're in the room, quote-unquote.
Then they're in the room. But, you know, Simeon had never made the semifinalist stage, even though he has been eligible for several years, unlike Ronde. This is Ronde's first year of eligibility. So Simeon wasn't getting any traction, you know, and they cut this list down from 108 names down to 27, and there's Simeon Rice. Now, there's another guy named, you know, before Buck fans go crazy and say, why isn't Simeon Canton? Why isn't this an open and shut case? First thing I'm going to say is this is not an open and shut case.
No.
This is not. Let's be realistic, Buck fans. Simeon Rice did some great things as a Buck. He could have been the MVP of the Super Bowl. Should have been. In retrospect. Played 7 career postseason games. Got 7 sacks.
Pretty good.
Game player. But there's a guy named Leslie O'Neal. Played for some bad San Diego teams with Junior Seau. Never went anywhere. Got more sacks than Simeon. And nobody ever mentions his name. So Simeon's not the only guy that's been overlooked in this process. It happens. You know, Paul Kraus, he's got 80-something interceptions. He's the number one guy of all time. And I think he waited 14 years to get in the Hall.
Wow.
You know, number one. So it happens. To say that Simeon is going to now take the next step in early January to get to 15 and then get in the room, unlikely. Impossible. But unlikely.
Okay.
I mean, this is a strong class coming in.
It is.
Especially with the newcomers, with Moss and Ray Lewis, Urlacher's got his people. Ronde, of course. Hutchinson, very good player.
Yeah.
So, you know, now, when it comes to Ronde Barber, I think it would have been a travesty if Ronde didn't make the 25. I think everybody would be very disappointed if he doesn't make the 15. So I am now preparing to make at least 2 presentations, maybe 3. But at least 2, because I know that Lynch is going to make the final 15.
You think that's slam dunk?
Think it's a slam dunk because not only has he made the 15 for 4 years in a row, the last 2 years, he made the first cut from 15 to 10. Yeah, he's just a little bit short of going in the Hall for 2 years in a row. So Ronde is a very unique player, and Steve, I'll wrap it up this way. If you're going to penalize John Lynch, if you're sitting there from Minnesota or Baltimore or Jacksonville, as a selector, and you're looking at John Lynch and saying, 26 interceptions. I'm not overly impressed with that. Why am I going to vote for him? Well, here comes Mr. Stat, Ronde Barber. You can't have it both ways. Steve, he's done things that no other defensive back, including everybody that's in the Hall of Fame at defensive back, including Deion Sanders, that they've never done it. Durability, versatility. Those are 2 big key words. And they like unique players. Unique. Ronde Barber, Lee, was unique.
Yes, he was.
No question about it. What do you got to say about that, Isbitz?
I have to just say, just because you mentioned it before, and it's just a pet peeve of mine, I hate the whole thing with Ronde of, he had the franchise's biggest play. That doesn't mean anything to me. If I was in the room.
It's the 7th thing I'm going to say.
It was a bolt of lightning play.
It's a play that exemplifies why he was great.
Well, I was talking to someone about this the other day, and this may be going to get off the beaten path a little bit, and I don't mean to, but
he schooled Donovan McNabb. He schooled him.
Your best players in any sport, they have a bolt of lightning play. Like, it was like you remember where you were What I mean, you remember everything about it. It's something you did not expect. It was a bolt of lightning. I liken it to Ozzie Smith's first home run ever, left-handed against the Dodgers, that swung the NLCS, and the Cardinals went to the World Series. It was like nobody in their mind thought this guy was going to hit a home run. Boom, in the ninth inning, he hits a home run, and Jack Buck's famous call, go crazy, folks, go crazy. That was a bolt of lightning moment. Rondé Barber, bolt of lightning moment. Michael Jordan, when he beat the Cavaliers, bolt of lightning moment. I mean, you can go on and on, bolt of lightning moments. That defines them for infamy. That's Rondé.
Isbitz has a few of those back in his house. Back in his home.
I don't know. I don't know.
All right, it's a minor point.
That's just me. You know, yeah, but it's a tough class. Ira,
wasn't it Dave Winfield? Didn't he have? Or no. Can't remember the first name. Carter, Blue Jays, both
Joe,
of lightning
Carter,
moment.
Joe Carter.
Both of lightning moment.
It's a tough class.
I mean, look, you got Randy Moss, Owens, Urlacher. You've got this whole safety thing again. You know, in Philly, they're saying Brian Dawkins, the whole thing's again. And you've got Atwater, personally, who I think is a great candidate. He's been around there before in the finalists, semifinalists.
A big hitter.
Yes, he was. He was very much like Lynch.
And a lot of these guys, they don't have a bolt of lightning moment. I don't hold it against them. I just don't know if
it's... But it sure helps them.
I don't know. If I was a voter, it wouldn't matter. But
I think the Boselli candidacy is going to be very interesting. After Terrell Davis got in with the short career... Boselli was a fantastic player.
He was incredible.
Now, Jimmy,
he was like a once in a generation.
Only played seven seasons.
That's true, but I mean, how many seasons did Gale Sayers play? Five. Yep. But he was so good, and I think the bar was already set with Sayers.
Steve, if a guy's the best player at his position for 4 or 5 years, that's a Hall of Famer. That's a Hall of Famer.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Oh, are you going to put John Abraham in the Hall of Fame? He's got more sacks than Simeon. More double-digit sacks.
I said
seasons.
If the guy's the best player in the league. At his position.
Okay.
That's a Hall of Fame.
At his position.
When he played at his position. Yeah. And Boselli was, no question about it.
4 or 5 years is almost an eternity in the NFL in certain regards. In certain regards.
I don't know if that's enough. 4 or 5 years? I think you could probably look at guys who've been there.
Well,
you know,
you got to be the best.
Yeah, like Sayers.
And Davis was the best postseason runner. In history.
That was a little shaky, but I always go back to Sayers.
I thought it was a little shaky.
Sayers was so over-the-top good.
Yes.
I mean,
nobody had ever seen anybody like Gale Sayers.
Yeah.
Nobody.
I'm not sure the 4 or 5 is enough, but I think it depends on the position, right? If you were the best quarterback for 5 years and you won 2 Super Bowls, you're going in. You got your work cut out for you there, Ira.
I do.
The politics of the whole thing, I hate it.
You're like Florio with the
politics. I'm fascinated and I hate it because, see... And I understand it's human beings voting, but the politics of it just stinks, you know, because you know there are guys who are going to be like, oh, well, I'm not putting $3 on my finalist ballot.
Yes.
You know, come on.
Yes.
And you're going to have.
Yeah, they won 1 Super Bowl. Come on.
And people are still talking about the Steelers have too many in there.
And, you know.
With Greenwood. L.C. Greenwood, who's excellent.
He's not in.
He's not in because a lot of people say there's too many Steelers in.
Yeah. You know, and then you've got, like, let's say you do get. Let's say you get all three as finalists. Let's say it just breaks that way. We know they have a...
So I make 3 presentations.
We know they have a fascination for pass rushers in the Hall of Fame. And let's say that all three are finalists. Well, somebody might say to you, is going to come back to you saying, Ira, who's the most, who is more important on that defense? Give us an order here. I'm not, you know, we need to know a pecking order for these three on the Bucks. Well, is that fair to Simeon Rice? He played a lot of his career.
I don't think I'm going to answer that question.
Before he got to the Bucks. Is that fair to Lynch, who... You know, 4 Pro Bowl years in Denver. The whole thing's messy. But we'll see. We'll see. You can't come out. You need a shot here. You need a shot. A jolt, Ira. No goose eggs.
Lee, to be fair, you know, knowing the way that the process works and doesn't work sometimes, Lee, I think it's a long shot for Simeon to make the 15 because this is the first time he even got to the 25. I mean, that would be a huge jump. For Simeon.
It would be.
Not impossible.
Because of the politics of the voting. They're not going to vote on the merits. They're going to vote
by the merits, there's some tremendous players.
I'm
going to
get you going here. I'm just going to throw this out there.
You haven't even mentioned any of the offensive linemen, Steve. There's some great ones.
I'm
going to throw this out there. Your buddy Michael Silver. And I've met him once before. He's an irritable guy. I don't care for him.
I saw him on that show last night, the other night.
Well, was it last night he said this or this morning? That he said it would be an outrage, a moral outrage, if Randy Moss got in before Terrell Owens.
I think he did say that. And by the way, I'm going to say this, guys. Now, I'm going to go in with an open mind, but I'm going to tell you the way I'm leaning a little bit right now before I hear any presentations. I've changed my mind on Terrell Owens. I have changed my mind.
So, Florio,
I have voted
down?
No two different times.
You're gonna...
And I've taken a beating over it from Florio and Russo and all of those types.
Who's more important, Florio, Russo, or Parcells and Andy Reid?
Well, what I'm going to say, Lee, is since February...
They wore you down.
No, I've talked to some other people.
Oh.
I've talked to people that I hadn't talked to before that have a lot of credibility.
Parcells
and,
doesn't?
And they have told me, well, you judge it all. You mix it all up.
Okay.
And they have told me that, yes, Owens was a shaky teammate. He caused some problems. But his production and his talent were so overwhelming. You're not talking about a marginal guy, you know. This is not Torrey Holt. This is Terrell Owens.
Wow, Torrey Holt was good, too.
Torrey Holt was good. Owens is on a little bit of a different level, I think.
These must be some heavy hitters here.
And I also think that Moss was a little bit better than Owens. A little bit more...
Moss was transcendent.
Transcendent. A little more transcendent. Not much, but a little bit. I don't think the league has ever seen anybody like Randy Moss.
I agree.
When he came in. So I'll say that. But I'm leaning a little bit towards Owens. I'm going to be very flexible.
All right, Sage, as is tradition here, your predictions for Sunday's Buccaneers game, and you pick the order. Who you want to start? You want Lee to start, me to start? What do
all
you
right,
want?
I'll kick it off, Lee, this time. I know Fitzpatrick's 2-0, guys. I know it. And Atlanta's coming off a short week, and they were in Seattle Monday night.
Yeah, it's like Vladivostok, isn't it?
That's not bad. That's an advantage, Bucks.
I used that line on camera. That's what Tony Kornheiser said.
It's good
Vladivostok.
Stuff. Yeah, that's good stuff. That's an advantage for the visitors this week. But having said all that, Atlanta's a better football team. Atlanta's a better team, especially with the Bucks having a backup quarterback. This might be the week Fitzpatrick shows that he's a backup quarterback. Might be. Atlanta's right in the thick of the hunt. They're 6-4. Big win in Seattle, although they didn't play particularly well down the stretch. Mm-hmm. Flattened Dallas the week before. I believe that game was in Dallas. They embarrassed the Cowboys.
Yeah, Claiborne's six.
And so I will go with the Falcons to end this little magic carpet ride of the Buccaneers. 30-13, Falcons.
I think the same way. You know, I picked the Bucs to lose last week because their defense on the road is garbage, and they almost proved me correct. It was garbage. Yes, they got turnovers.
Second half garbage. Second
oh,
half garbage.
Yeah. Don't get me going. Right. So I'm going to stick with that. I hate to say it. Matty Ice is going to riddle them. Julio Jones is going to go nuts. Is Devontae Freeman healthy yet?
He's in concussion protocol.
Okay, so we don't know about him. 33-13 Atlanta.
All right, Sage.
Are you going to be the voice of reason here, Isbitz?
Well, I'm a game behind you in the standings.
So you absolutely have to go the opposite way.
Just like the
friend.
Hall of Fame. I do believe, well, we got 6 Bucks games left. I think they're going to score an upset or two down the stretch.
They've won in Atlanta the last 2 years, Steve.
Yeah, they seem comfortable in Atlanta. Quan Alexander always plays out of his mind in Atlanta. He's healthy, and they're doing they're letting up a lot of yards, but they are doing a lot of good things on defense, which they'll need to do, the opportunistic stuff they'll have to do against Atlanta. I think they're going to get a couple of wins down the stretch here. So off that short week, and you come, like they arrived. I was looking in Atlanta. They arrived at like 6:30 in the morning.
Wow. Wow.
And then they're, you know, adjusted schedule on Thanksgiving. It's a weird week
so
to
Tuesday's
to do
a wipeout day.
Tuesday's a wipeout. Thursday is a wipeout in a lot of ways. I just think it's funny. I like Fitzpatrick while he's still healthy, while he still has his marbles and he's not fried yet as a 35.
Still got his Rubik's cubes, right?
I think he's just playing so comfortable that there's. I wouldn't shock me if the Bucs got out to a 13-7 lead here and found a miracle. So I think they're going to win an upset this year. So I think this is the week I'm going to go 21-20 Bucs in a miracle.
And you know what, guys? If they win this game, things get interesting.
Yes.
Things get interesting.
You get Green Bay next, correct?
Green Bay next.
Yeah, Green Bay next and
winnable.
Everything on the line. But, you know, all those weapons, somebody's got to have a breakout game somewhere. Somebody, you know, DeSean Jackson on the turf, I really want to see that.
Not only does it get interesting, but, you know, the reason why I said the Bucs will lose is because they play good defense at home. So that's even more interesting because they they got the Saints at home.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And Atlanta again.
Point. You're right.
At home.
If it was a life and death call, I would pick Atlanta. So we'll leave it at
but
that.
But it's not.
But it's not. So we're going to go with the football gods.
And we all wish our listeners a happy holidays, right, Stephen?
Absolutely. Thanksgiving. Hey, it's Thanksgiving, right? You got to watch football and relax.
We're all going to Atlanta. We're all going.
We will be a SWAT team in Atlanta. I've got some family coming in, so it's a perfect time for me to leave and head out of town. So that's fantastic.
Podcast from Atlanta.
We'll see. A victory podcast.
Maybe. Is that the first road podcast? It is, isn't it?
I believe it is. Yes, it is.
All right, Sage, enjoy.
Thank
Say
you,
hi to
friend.
Dante and get out of here.